This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We've got a surprise for you this week. Rather than our regular show, we went off campus to check out what is real luxury.
Okay, then, if you look up the phrase luxury hospitality, the three-word definition you would find might be Mandarin Oriental Hotels. What started in 1963 with Hong Kong's legendary Mandarin Hotel is now a global chain whose properties, services, amenities, and charm are synonymous with relaxed, elegant, sumptuous hospitality at its very best. And one of the finest properties among the many fine Mandarin Oriental hotels worldwide is right here in D.C.
The hotel is maybe the city's prettiest. It's perched right above the Southwest waterfront. It's got views of everything from the Jefferson Memorial and the Tidal Basin to the Washington Monument and Arlington Cemetery. And it's a peak luxury experience whether you're a guest there or just dropping in for a meal. Nick and I have eaten at City's Inn and Mews several times and really had a blast. You can go for a spa day. You can go for an extended stay, or if you're a local, maybe just a crazy getaway staycation.
David and I have dined at Mews and City's Inn and attended events at the hotel, but we've never really been exposed to all that it has to offer. Given that opportunity by the hotel's management, we recently spent a day living at the Mandarin Oriental. We toured the property from the presidential suite to the ballrooms and checked out the spa. We met many of its key people, and we even got the down low on some great anecdotes about how far hotel staff has gone to deliver luxurious, one-of-a-kind service to its guests from both near and far.
So our day started with Tim Harleth, the hotel's director of front office operations, who greeted us right as we arrived. In fact, Tim's the guy responsible for each guest arrival experience, and we asked him to talk about Mandarin Oriental's special approach.
There's a certain set of people that are used to luxury hotels, and everyone wants to stay at St. Regis, everyone wants to stay at the Ritz-Carlton, but people aspire to stay at the Mandarin Oriental. And when you walk into the hotel, this is, for us, an oasis in the city. You enter in our lobby, you have the polished marble, you have the Italian woodworking, you have the rotunda in the center of the lobby that references the Jefferson Memorial, and you're greeted with a smile. You walk to the front desk, and the first words that you hear are, "Welcome to Mandarin Oriental." You don't hear, "Can I have your name?" You don't hear, "Can I have your room number?" You hear, "Welcome to Mandarin Oriental." And whether you're a celebrity, a local Washingtonian, a family on vacation, a former president, a CEO, you're greeted just the same. Welcome to Mandarin Oriental.
We talked about the company's origins and of the property here in D.C.
It began actually back in 1963 with the opening of the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong. And for a long time, it was just with the Mandarin Hotel. And roughly 10 years later, in 1974, the absolutely legendary hotel, the Bangkok, the Oriental in Bangkok, opened. And from there, the name Mandarin Oriental was born. When Mandarin Oriental opens a hotel in a city, it's all about the sense of place. The great thing that our location affords us that no other hotel in Washington has is the incredible views. You can look out over the Washington Marina, over the Tidal Basin, cherry blossom scenes. We're ground zero for the beautiful trees along the Jefferson Memorial. So I think first and foremost, being able to afford guests a great view from their guest room. We're obviously right next to USDA and Bureau of Printing and Engraving as well. But that said, even back then, 2004, when this hotel opened, there was a vision for the waterfront. And I think now, P. and Hoffman and the incredible development team that's going down there, millions of dollars, condos, restaurants, right. A new venue. music venue, nightlife options, and new hotels. It's going to be, I think, a really big game changer for the city. No offense to my counterparts across town, but I don't want to say Georgetown is dead, but in 5-10 years, people are going to want to come to the waterfront.
Granting that a city like Washington has many luxury hotels, we asked him to discuss the ways in which Mandarin Oriental differentiates its own luxury brand of service.
By delighting our guests.
Okay.
And it's really inspiring because you come into the hotel and every single colleague, whether it's food and beverage, whether it's the dishwasher and stewarding, the housekeeper, the front desk, the general manager, we all have this commitment to excellence, and we have this commitment to come into work every day and make a difference. And I think it's that commitment to excellence that makes us the best.
The hotel's artwork is like nothing you've ever seen, especially the painting in the main lobby. We got the whole lowdown on it.
I think the biggest piece as it relates to the artwork is our famous swinging empress portrait that hangs in the lobby. It's by the artist Jun Young Huang, if you can say that five times fast.
I'm not
going to
even say it.
Yeah. Say it once more. Come on.
Jun Young Huang.
Very good.
Jun Young Huang. Anybody can say that.
Yeah. I can. I butcher people's names all the time.
Fred Smith? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally everyone who walks past that stops, takes
it's
a look at it.
Crazy.
It's
crazy.
It
so
really
beautiful.
Is. It's and for those who haven't seen it, it's the last empress of China on a swing flying over the landscape of a modern Washington, D.C. with a trail of monkeys jumping behind her.
And that really happened, right?
It really did, yeah.
It's
it
a
really
depiction
did.
Of an actual event.
It's funny enough, people stop and they go, so are the monkeys supposed to symbolize members of Congress? Or what's the symbolism
of
this?
Oh, that's fascinating.
Your answer is, that's not part of my training.
Yeah, that's,
that's what you think?
Just like the artwork, the place is crazy gorgeous. It's really like nothing else you're going to find anywhere in D.C., so we naturally wanted to know about the design team and about what it takes to keep every nook and cranny looking so shiny and new.
HBA, Hirschbender Associates out of Atlanta, is the initial designer for this hotel. They also designed our property up in New York.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's, I think, especially with the Asian decor, it's a very modern, it keeps very well over the years. For us, as it relates to maintaining the product, it's about making sure that you're investing the money to ensure that the rooms that we have in the hotel, that the restaurants that we have, the marble, everything is kept fresh and pristine. And if you're going to charge the type of money that we charge to stay here, the product needs to be first class. The interesting thing, too, with Mandarin Oriental is that we invest a lot into the properties that we also operate. So even in New York, where I believe Dubai World is still the owner there, Mandarin Oriental is still a partner and owns a percentage within a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see a lot of like the deflagging of hotels that you might see with other companies where you're just the management company there.
Right.
But also, I think it's a commitment to that hotel that we are going to invest the money to ensure that the product is maintained. And it's not easy to convince an owner we need to spend $300,000 to buy a new elevator.
Right.
But when you need to do it, you need to do it. And it pays off down the road.
Okay. So you'd expect the accommodations in one of DC's finest luxury hotels to be absolutely awesome. And they are. But after the standard tour of guest rooms, we asked Tim for a sneak peek at two of the hotel's legendary suites, the Jefferson and the $15,000 a night presidential suite.
It was designed by Karen Kent, which is the designer out of Atlanta. And when you walk into the room, there's this wow feeling because you have this double high ceiling with a beautiful sitting area overlooking the Jefferson Memorial. And it's sitting there right near your point of view. To the right, you have a stunning dining room with a view over the Washington Monument, adjacent to a second bedroom, the kitchenette. Further down, the bedroom and the fantastic marble bathroom with a shower large enough for a soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a small fitness facility as well. There's a treadmill around the corner from there, too.
I have never showered with a soccer team, but
the presidential suite is totally sweet. And we asked him to give us some of the backstories about some of the heavy hitters who've stayed there. But unfortunately,
it really depends. And people actually, the individuals that stay here come from all walks in life. Heads of state, obviously CEOs.
Are you at liberty to say what presidents have stayed in the presidential suite?
Unfortunately, I cannot. But it's very high profile individuals. You come here, these individuals, oftentimes they're traveling with personal security, they're traveling with assistants. So it's not just the presidential suite, but multiple rooms as well. Mm-hmm. And when you book a suite like this, you're getting butler service, you're getting our entire guest relations team who are literally living in the hotel, catering on a very micro level to every need and the intricacy and the detail that goes behind just the day of the individual waking up to breakfast, to lunch, to housekeeping service is, I think, would really surprise some people. And you stay here, $15,000 a night, it's really no different from the level of service that we provide from really all the guest rooms, and those standards of service are the same. We have a pillar within our company of never saying no.
So 15 G's is a lot of Benjamins for one night, but it does buy you a lot of service above and beyond the call of duty. And Tim did offer up some anecdotes about some of the more out there demands that some of the guests have made.
So we had someone that was staying here in the presidential suite. This gentleman was from Europe, and he had stayed here for a week, $15,000 a night.
It's like playing Pictionary. Okay, what part of Europe? Where in Europe?
He was departing the next day and had run out of this very specific type of medication. And he came to the butler, to the guest relations team, and said, can you purchase this medication for me? I'm checking out tomorrow. I need this medication before I leave Washington. No problem. We called around to a local pharmacy. We got the medication. We brought it back. It was a different brand. The medication was branded differently in the United States than it was branded in Europe. Mm-hmm. And he would not accept the U.S. brand. It had to be the European brand.
I'm starting to stress out.
Yeah. So was our guest relations team. So we go downstairs and we're putting our heads together. We call our sister hotel in Europe. We speak to the manager on duty there, and we lay down the story. We need this medication. Do you have it? Is it nearby? He says, give me a second. He goes out around the corner. There's a pharmacy from our hotel there in London. Finds that medication, comes back and says, I have it, and you know, we can ship it out to you. And we're like, perfect. The problem was FedEx doesn't pick up in London for shipping on Saturday. It only delivers in London on Saturday. So we're not going to get this medication until Monday. And this idea of never saying no and trying to find alternative solutions, it's company-wide. And the manager in London volunteered to literally grab the medication, get on a plane, fly direct to Washington, D.C., and he was here that night with the medication so that we had it before the next day.
Well, that's what $15,000 I get you.
You know, that's why my training would not work. I would have been downstairs erasing the name of the medication.
We would have been making a new label.
That's right.
Slapping it on top.
No, it's really interesting. I have another story, too.
Okay, let's hear it.
On the same subject. Another high-profile individual, this gentleman was American. And he was staying in here, also $15,000 a night. And it was also Saturday, very quiet Saturday afternoon. And I happened to be actually working that day. Literally out of nowhere, SUVs and police crawlers roll up to the front of the hotel, and Secret Service swarms the lobby of the hotel. Bomb sniffing dogs and everything. And obviously not an everyday occurrence that you have Secret Service invade your hotel without any advance warning.
Right.
But nothing actually that we haven't quite dealt with before. And then 5 minutes later, I get a call from the assistant saying that a head of state is in town on the way to the hotel to meet with the individual that was staying in the presidential suite. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, this head of state walks right through the front door, Secret Service surrounding him, whisked up the elevator right to the suite. Then, and literally 5 minutes later from that, I get a second call from the assistant saying that the guest and this head of state would like to dine in the hotel for lunch, and they would like the lunch in 45 minutes, and they want a very specific type of fish for lunch. So I'm like, okay, I think we can do this. I call down to the kitchen, I call down to the chefs, I'm like, do we have this fish? No fish, not on the menu, none in any of the kitchens. So now I'm starting to get nervous because I only have 45 minutes to prepare this meal. I can't find this fish in the hotel. I start calling other restaurants in the city. No one has this fish.
Do you remember what kind of fish?
If I say the name of the fish, it might give away who the head of state and the guest were.
Okay.
We're not that smart. We appreciate the compliment.
It was a little hectic there for a while because obviously I'm under a gun here to get this fish on property. I'm calling other hotels. No one has this fish. I was literally my fiance was a line cook. I was literally a couple minutes away from having her reach out to her chefs at L'Académie de Cuisine to get a hold of someone at the White House to see if we had this fish. But no one had this fish in the city. I had already called down to the fish market around back and spoke to someone there, and they were like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. But since it's within walking distance of the hotel, I decided as a final effort to walk down myself and see if I can get a hold of the owner or the manager there and see if we can find this fish. I go down there and probably a little bit too frantic and maybe a little annoying for the people that were working down there, but eventually the owner came out. He talked to me. He told me no initially, but then kind of thought about it. I saw him walk back into the freezer, like deep freeze, and he pulls out this box, and this is the fish that I'm looking for. So now I have like 20 minutes until this meal is to be prepared. I take the fish, run back to the hotel, straight to the kitchen. Luckily, our executive chef is there, and I hand him this box of these frozen fish, and I'm like, chef,
good luck.
You have 15 minutes, but I really need a Michelin star meal prepared for this presidential suite. And the amazing thing was is that he did it. He pulled it off. And I think it's just, with that story and the one before, it's just a testament to there's always going to be obstacles when you are providing luxury service, but you need to find that alternative because you can't go to the back and say, you can't go back to the guest and say, no, I can't find this fish. You just need to make it happen. It helps if you have an amazing chef too.
Seeing how the other half lived made us hungry. So Tim dropped us in the capable hands of Mark McDonald, chef de cuisine at Muse. You'll hear all about that when we come back.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Friends, families, and teams, lace up your running shoes and meet me at the ballpark for the KC Cares 5K at Oriole Park. Hi, I'm Baltimore Orioles right fielder Nick Markakis. Join my family and me Saturday, August 2nd, as we kick off the event. You'll be running to help a critically ill child. Both the 3.1-mile race and the mile walk begin at Cannon Yards and actually end on the field. Visit kccares5k.org to register now.
Please join former Major League Baseball player Mike Pagliarulo, Pags, as he hosts the 4th annual America's Adopt-A-Soldier fundraising golf tournament at Osprey Golf Course on July 15th. America's Adopt-A-Soldier is an established nonprofit organization that provides a positive impact on our nation's wounded and deployed service members, homeless veterans and their families. All donations go directly to support their projects and programs. For more info, visit americasadoptasoldier.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis talking about the incredible day we spent at the Mandarin Oriental, Washington, D.C. The hotel is situated overlooking the Southwest Marina, and our tour of that gorgeous property next took us to the hotel's newest signature restaurant, Muse, where we sat down for lunch with chef de cuisine Mark McDonald. Mark is very much an Irishman, and we, of course, first asked him about how he got from there to here.
First 21 years of my life were 20 years of my life were in Dublin, Ireland. I did my apprenticeship on the west coast at a five-star hotel called the Great Southern Hotel, Parknassilla. So I spent a year and a half when I was 17 in Kerry. I did my apprenticeship there, and then moved back to Dublin.
What got you interested in cooking to begin with?
If I was going to be completely honest with myself, it was an excuse to get out of school.
Okay.
Sounds like Cahal Armstrong.
Yeah, it's probably that. And I know Cahal, and I'm sure he uses the same.
Well, let me ask, school in Ireland so horrible?
Yeah. They're all run by Christian brothers and nuns. They do anything to get out. But so we have a year between when you're 15 and 16, we have a year in high school that's called transition year. And before you go into for your final exams or your A-levels or whatever you might call it, you get the opportunity to do work experience and more practical work.
Mm-hmm. That's a great
for
idea.
That year.
Like vocational?
Yeah, it's kind of like vocational school, mm-hmm. but it's just 1 year within your high school tenure. And when I did that, I ended up I did 10 weeks with a fire brigade station, and then I did 20 weeks in a kitchen.
Okay.
So I ended up falling in love with it. And then after that year, I decided to give up high school and go and pursue a career in the culinary industry.
Chef Mark had worked in Dublin at the very famous Le Crevin and then shifted to restaurants in London. And then he wound up in Australia? How? Why? You can bet a girl had something to do with it.
Australia happened when I met my fiancée.
It's always a girl, isn't it?
It's always a girl, yeah.
At the end of us.
And this is I met her in Peru when I was backpacking.
Oh, neat.
On the coast of Ecuador. And she's American. She has a U.S. passport, and obviously I have a European passport, and we had nowhere to stay. But Australia were taking vagabonds at the time. So I got a year visa. She got a year visa. We moved to Melbourne, and eventually my job sponsored me. So I was able to stay there as a permanent resident on a four-year visa.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And then what did you do? Swim to America?
And then, yeah, I took the long-haul flight to L.A. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer studied here at AU. She's originally from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But because of her connections with AU and this city, we moved here. Mm-hmm. And I worked at Rogue 24 with RJ Cooper.
How'd you wind up with RJ?
He had a position open, literally when I got off the plane and I started looking for work. I saw a thing online.
It must have been when Rogue just opened.
Right? Rogue had been open coming up on a year, and the chef de cuisine was leaving.
Right. So let me ask you a question. I mean, given your training and the style of cuisine going on at Rogue 24, were you prepared to enter that kind of kitchen?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, for sure. My training and my background was very much in fine dining and Michelin-rated restaurants up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very well prepared for Rogue 24. There was no issues there.
We brought the conversation back around to the beautiful lunch before us and to Muse, which only recently debuted after the renovation of what had been Sou'Wester. Chef McDonald, who had actually been at Rogue 24 with RJ Cooper prior to coming to Muse, talked about the challenges of Muse that attracted him.
It's an all-day dining restaurant, so it's one of the first times I've worked at a restaurant like this since I was doing my apprenticeship like 12, 13 years ago. So it's the concept of the all-day dining was something that was new to me, the breakfast and the lunch. So that was new and exciting, and I'd gotten to the point in my career, or my very short career, that I was in limbo as to what to do. Did I want to continue working the 5 day weeks with the Sunday Mondays off, or did I want to step in and try my hand in a different area of the hospitality industry,
mm-hmm.
and try to venture into it and succeed in it? So this opportunity came knocking, and I jumped on it.
The biggest challenge certainly was creating the personality in the menu for Muse.
When I first arrived, they were trying to decide on a name. They had picked a concept where they wanted, you know, American fare and local produce with Asian influence in its ingredients and its orientation. But it was working with those people, sourcing. Eric had already had the suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
So the Path Valley and the Tuscaroras and those types of people, they're already implemented and established within the company. So there wasn't a lot of.
So the product was here.
The product was here. It was just about finding the vision that the F&B team had, and then me being able to execute it with my expertise and experience.
How much experience had you had with an Asian twist on dishes?
The advantage to that was that prior to coming to America after Australia, Jennifer and I spent 6 months traveling Southeast Asia.
Oh.
So I spent a month in Cambodia, I spent a month in Vietnam, a month in China, I spent a month in New Zealand. So I had experience.
Were you stodging at those places?
No, I was eating street fare, traveling with a backpack.
Well, so do you travel around the city and, for example, do you go and eat Scott Druneau's food and
I
see
do,
what
yeah.
he's doing and seeing what others
Definitely.
Are doing, and does that impact what you're doing
here? Finding the ingredients that he uses impacts, or the different things that people might find and have on their menu. It might be like, oh, I don't have that on my menu. Not necessarily using that ingredient as an influence for me to use it for a dish.
So you get inspired by
yeah.
other people.
Oh, definitely.
Muse is open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and Asian influences are found in each of the menus. First, we chatted about breakfast.
People can find very noticeable dishes and things that they know, like the beetroots and the tuna and the cucumber and the gazpacho. They'll just find hints of Asian ingredients. Like, we use the miso, we use the wasabi. Yuzu is a big thing. Mirin, soya sauces. Using them for our marinades. We have a beautiful lamb on the dinner menu at the moment, which is marinated with honey, soya sauce, and some sesame oil. So it's not necessarily making an Asian dish, but it's just using those.
I just started to salivate.
Yeah. It's just using those ingredients to enhance it and bring the Asian heritage of the hotel company to this restaurant. So with our breakfast menu, it's very stable fare, because obviously people wake up in the wrong bed in a different city, in a different time zone. They tend to be a little bit more cranky or angry, so we don't sell a lot of congee. But certainly when you go into our lunch and our dinner menus, you see more of the influences of those Asian hints.
So what, for example, is on the breakfast menu every day?
On our breakfast menu day, we have our fresh fruits, all of our melons, our pineapples, all sliced fresh every morning on our buffet. We do our one Asian dish that sells a lot of is the congee with poached egg. Pickled ramps at the moment,
that's
because
delicious.
They're in season.
That's totally at my alley.
It's got poached egg, pickled ramps, bok choy when ramps are out of season. So that would be our go-to Asian breakfast, would be the congee.
Okay.
And then it's the traditional American. We have our omelets, we have our fried eggs, we have our eggs any way they like, French toasts.
So if you listen to this show, you know that if I'm involved, there's got to be food somewhere. And while we were talking to Chef McDonald, we were also lunching on a beautifully displayed fresh beetroot salad, tuna tartare, and a really crisp gazpacho. And those are just three of the many offerings on the lunch menu at Muse.
We have the beetroot dish, which is heirloom beetroots from Path Valley Farms. And we have a ginger yogurt. We have some fresh beetroot crudités. Apple wontons is what we call them, but basically it's freshly spun apple ribbons, and then we dredge them in a togarashi flour and then deep fry them.
It's a beautiful
kind of
dish.
Togarashi, which is a Japanese spice.
Okay.
So that's the beetroot. The tuna is cucumber, seaweed, some freshly diced tuna. It's all marinated in a sesame soy vinaigrette. It has some fried shiso leaves, pomegranate seeds for the crunch, and some fresh radish.
It's like the perfect salad.
And then we have our gazpacho. Tomatoes are now in season. It's a classic gazpacho, olive oil, bread, tomatoes, tomato juice, red onion, cucumber, pepper. It's served with a goat's cheese foam, which comes out of an espuma gun, and then we have some micro basil.
And I can tell you that that delicious lunch only made us more curious about what was up for dinner.
On dinner time, we have the opportunity to play a little bit more.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously we have some restrictions. You know, there are people here that want particular things. You know, they may be away from home, they may just want a steak, they may just want a burger, and that's okay. That's what we're here to provide. We're the Mandarin Oriental. But on the other side, we can use the skills of myself and the sous chefs Nuvi and Chris, and kind of, you know, promote a climate of enthusiasm for the cooks themselves to, you know, progress and use those techniques.
Well, let's go back to the dinner menu.
Yeah.
So since you get to play a little bit more at dinner time, what are some of the items that people can find on your dinner?
One of the more popular items is our braised veal cheeks. Mm-hmm. So we braise them with fermented black beans. Yeah. So then we make a black bean sauce. We make a carrot and star anise puree. Mm-hmm. We have some heirloom carrots, some crudités. I like I like my food very fresh. I feel like that's the way things are going. So I do crudité and roasted carrots. Mm-hmm. And then we have micro cilantro as well. Mm-hmm. Another one of our popular dishes is our rockfish from Chesapeake Bay, which is a crispy skin. The potatoes then have some... the potatoes are roasted first. Mm-hmm. And they're roasted in a tin foil bag with some soy sauce. And then we crush them with black olives, garlic oil, some chopped dill. Serve it with some fresh fennel and some tempered sea beans.
So super easy to make, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of thought process.
Anyone can do this at home.
A lot of the dishes are very easy to do at home. It's just some of the tweaks that we try and make them just to bring the standard up a little bit.
Yeah.
It would be almost impossible to leave Muse without indulging in a sweet treat. And Chef McDonald was only too happy to talk about the restaurant's dessert and pastry program.
Jeffrey Munchell is the executive pastry chef for the hotel. Mm-hmm. He has a team of five downstairs that take care of the hotel as a whole, excluding Cities Inn. So one of his pastry cooks tends to be assigned to the Muse pastry program and mise en place. Mm-hmm. So what we do is together Jeffrey and I will put together desserts and ideas and stuff like that, and then we'll incorporate them and get them onto the menu. So it's definitely a joint program between myself and Jeffrey for the restaurant, because he has a lot of pressures as well with our banqueting program and our in-room dining and stuff like that.
Like the rest of the Mandarin Oriental's team, Chef McDonald's focus is on personalized service and personal satisfaction, accommodating each guest's needs, however much out of the box it is. Chef shared one great example.
One of my first nights working here, a gentleman had just come back from doing business in Asia for 5 or 6 weeks. And his first stop was here back in the United States. And he came in and he literally asked for 3 peanut butter sandwiches, but each one was on a different type of bread, and each one was with a different type of jam.
So the manager from London flew it in.
Yeah. Right? So he had like a wheat bread, a white bread, and a rye bread, and he had a strawberry jam or jelly, an orange marmalade, and then each one was with peanut butter because he was craving it.
So after an hour with Chef McDonald, I have to say that the one word that describes him is affable. And as we left the restaurant, he really explained how his personality and his approach is emphasized in the welcoming nature of his menu and of the restaurant as a whole.
It's very approachable. Mm-hmm. What we do here is not meant to be stuck up. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm just trying to add some spokes to it to make it exciting. I really just want people to come, have a good time, enjoy themselves, and feel Mandarin Oriental service. A lot of people have never experienced it because they have no need to stay here because they live in DC. Mm-hmm. But the opportunity to come over to the restaurant and dine and experience what we have to offer within the building is something that I would love.
More Mandarin Oriental on the way on Foodie and the Beast when we return.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
The National Building Museum presents Designing for Disaster, a new exhibition exploring how design, engineering, and construction respond to natural disasters. Discover how we can save lives and build more resilient communities. Featuring the interactive Wall of Wind, where visitors of all ages can test proof performance in hurricane force winds. Open now at the National Building Museum. Find hours and admission information online at nbm.org. That's nbm.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus.
It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking about the great day we spent at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, looking over the shoulders of the folks that work there. Our lunch in Muse was awesome and put us both in a very relaxed state. I confess, I went off to chill out a little while Nick went to where else? The spa at the Mandarin Oriental, where she met up with Brandon Coffing, the hotel's director of spa.
As we've been talking about, the Mandarin Oriental is all about luxury. Of course, the spa was no disappointment. The spa is way down below the hotel, sort of a getaway luxury cave. I asked Brandon for a 411 on the program.
At Mandarin Oriental focuses most deeply on our Oriental heritage and how we can blend some of those ancient and Eastern techniques with something that's still contemporary and modern today. So we're committed to luxury and providing the best products and services to our guests.
Brandon offered a virtual tour of the spa from the moment you walk through the front door.
If you were to come to the Mandarin Oriental Spa and enjoy our signature spa therapy, you would be greeted in the reception area by a concierge and sat down to have a personalized welcome and greeting to the spa. So again, as we welcome our guests in a way that reflects that Oriental heritage, you are greeted with a tea and warm towel, and we offer a shoe exchange. So before you even step foot into the facilities, it's just this moment where the concierge that greets you has a moment of humility, kneels down at your side, takes your shoes, which kind of signify the day's travels and journeys, and then you're provided with comfortable spa slippers and fully prepared to start your journey. At that point, a spa facilitator will take you back into the locker room, provide you with a tour of our heat and water facilities, which include a vitality pool. Similar to a jacuzzi, we just keep the pools a little bit lower temperature than that. If you're in too hot of a jacuzzi, it's relaxing to your muscles, but it's also draining to your energy. So a vitality pool helps you get that relaxation, but still have the energy to fully enjoy the rest of the experience. There's also amethyst steam rooms, experience showers, and just a nice relaxation area with chaise loungers, tea, infused water, and just a nice full time to really decompress from the outside world, prepare yourself for the treatment.
Shoes off. According to my wife, I have America's ugliest feet, so I don't think anybody wants me to take my shoes off, myself included.
Well, actually, I asked about that.
I've been at 3 Mandarin Oriental spas now, Las Vegas, San Francisco, and here, and had that moment with several guests, and I'm quite surprised. I had the same concern at first, I would say. And I've been quite surprised at how well it's taken, because I think by the time that you get to the spa and check in, you're really just sort of ready for the ride and ready for the experience. And it might be surprising at first, but it at least sets off your day on a certain tone. And that's what we're going for. We really just wanted to have something that's a little bit different to start off.
If we're talking spa, you know we're going to be talking about massage.
Massage, that's more like it. Touch me. Feel me.
I figured you'd like that. And no surprise that a massage treatment at the Mandarin Oriental is a transcendent experience.
So I briefly mentioned the signature spa therapy that we offer, and how that would work is it's a 2-hour treatment. So right away, you know that you're going to have a nice, luxurious journey there.
That sounds like a long time.
It's a while, but it's amazing how fast it goes when you actually have it and you're ready to keep going. But the way that treatment works is the therapist will have you fill out a consultation form, which helps profile kind of your personalities and maybe any discomforts or issues that you have, whether it's stress related or muscle tension or anything like that. And what we're trying to do is find out which of the 5 elements in traditional Chinese medicine might be a little out of balance. So this signature spa therapy is going to determine which element that is. So fire, water, earth, metal, and wood, and then prescribe a specific treatment based on that. So all of these treatments are, of course, rooted in massage, but there's different acupressure points used throughout the treatment that correspond with that element. So that's kind of the traditional Chinese medicine side of the treatment, but we've also infused this whole idea with an aromatherapy aspect. Mm-hmm. So we partnered with aromatherapy associates and traditional Chinese medicine doctors to create 5 unique aromatherapy oils, one for each of the 5 elements. So you filled out a diagnostic form, we've gotten to know you a little bit, and then we move on to a sensory test, a smell test, of a couple of the oils that may be suited your needs. The thing about aromatherapy, which I think we're seeing a big uptick on, and especially in America right now, is when you smell an aromatherapy oil, your body instantly will tell you if this is something that you need at the moment. So when you have a couple of options, it helps to hone kind of that final deciding factor of which way it goes. We like to tell each other internally that the nose never lies. So Okay. Even if you're like on the line, it comes down to the body knows what it needs best.
And what do these aromatherapies provide? Is it just sort of a sense of relaxation or a sense of vitalization? How are they incorporated into the massage?
So that these aromatherapy oils will be used as the massage oil.
Okay.
And of course, an inhalation oil as well. So mm-hmm. you take 3 nice deep breaths at the beginning of the treatment of that aromatherapy oil just to get the kind of body in the right place.
Okay.
You asked if they were calming or vitalizing. It really depends on which of those elements. What are we trying to accomplish? So we have very much both. For example, the release blend has a lot of eucalyptus and peppermint, which most people are accustomed to what that smells like. I mean, if you're kind of stuffed up, that can be a symptom of an imbalance in the metal element, which is all about respiration. So obviously, like difficulty breathing, when you smell a nice deep breath of eucalyptus, like clears
you
it right up.
Right.
So that would be the idea for that oil. We also have oils that are very calming to tone the brain down for our active thinkers.
It's no secret that I am totally into skincare, so naturally, that was my next question for Brandon.
We have the Diamond Facial, for example, which uses firming type of actions, and these products have really taken off in Mandarin Orientals globally, especially in the Americas, because we have this growing excitement about results driven. It's not just about pampering. It's not just about stress release. It's about beauty and preserving youth and really having, making some strides there. So our estheticians love to help people form a home regimen with products that are suited specifically to their needs.
To me, the spa was perfectly relaxing and looked beautiful. But Brandon told me that it too is about to get a little Mandarin Oriental facelift.
What we're trying to accomplish is of course, having a fresh look on everything. We're going to be moving to a lot of really nice fabrics and plums and softer touches. Right now we have a lot of marble, which is really beautiful, but we're looking to...
But really loud. It's loud.
It is loud.
When I walked in, I'm like, I'm making too much noise.
Right. And we want you to feel comfortable right from the minute instead of being worried about how loud your footsteps sound. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of those type of changes. But the biggest idea that we're going for is to really customize the arrival process. So right now, you approach a big, tall, wide marble desk, and that's kind of already a barrier between the guest and us.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it serves a purpose, and we're able to do things, but we're going to completely remove the desk and put in little circular banquettes and have them kind of semi-private with some drapes and things like that, so that when you are having that moment, and which can be kind of vulnerable at first, to sit down and give your shoes to a stranger. We wanted you to feel as comfortable and relaxed as possible.
Unfortunately, it was time to leave the spa. But fortunately, it was time for cocktails. So I joined Blake Parker, bar and lounge manager, to get the lowdown on everything from the cocktail program to the tea service at the Mandarin Oriental's Empress Lounge. Now, when I arrived, Empress Lounge was on fire, filled with boisterous fans of a World Cup match. Blake and I headed to a corner table to chat. I asked him to talk about the new cocktail menu.
So all of our cocktails, we actually just revamped our menu. In the sense that we redid all of our cocktails from scratch. A lot of craft beer, a lot of craft cocktails, self-creations from the bartenders and myself. A lot of mixology work as far as preparation and garnishes. Very, more or less an oasis for our business crowd during the happy hour periods of 4 to 7. Typically during the day it's, you know, quieter business, casual lunch place for not only our hotel guests, but a lot of government workers or surrounding businesses. An evening business heavily relies on, you know, hotel traffic. As well as guests who extend the stay from happy hour period.
The way Blake described how he and his team came up with the cocktail recipes, it sounded like mad scientists at work.
All of our bartenders, we met with myself and kind of broke it down and took actually a good 2 weeks period in kind of revamping our cocktail menu. Started from scratch as far as, you know, playing with local ingredients, whether that be fruit, vegetables. More or less turned into our Asian roots of, you know, how can we make it more of a Mandarin Oriental feel. Kind of, like I mentioned, broke it down from scratch into, you know, taking a simple gin and tonic and how can we make it different. So whether it be using a different soda product or a different garnish or, you know, splashing it with something else, maybe a juice or another liqueur, kind of making it our own with the Asian twist or, you know, personalized craft cocktail twist.
No surprise, Empress Lounge is not just for cocktails. Their beer and wine programs are excellent and have lots of local flavor.
Yeah, so we keep, you know, obviously our bartenders and myself are continually working about, you know, how can we make one certain cocktail a little bit different or how can we develop new ideas. Something that we're trying now that's a little bit different are beer cocktails. We are using some craft beers that are localized.
Cocktails? You're thinking cocktails?
Exactly, okay. Exactly. What's something new that we've developed with the Mandarin itself is we've seen a lot of business travelers or hotel guest travelers to kind of come into a lounge, especially hotel lounge, and kind of wondering about what's a local selection of beer, whether it be wine or beer itself, kind of what's different, what's new in this region. So I reached out to a couple of our vendors and some of the personal favorites of, you know, some Virginia products, Baltimore products, and D.C. products, both towards wine and beer itself.
There are very few spots around town where you can find a traditional tea service and a high-quality spot of tea. One of those places is the Empress Lounge, where tea service is truly a work of art.
Tea is actually a newly product. I believe we relaunched tea into a a la carte or a traditional table setting style back in, I believe it was January. So we do serve afternoon tea Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays from 2:30 to 4:30. We do a tableside service on a traditional three-tier silver stand. You're greeted by a host with a lovely iPad of everything through Open Table Book, you know, the hotel bookings themselves. Greeted to the table with a personalized envelope, which says whether it be the Smith party or happy birthday, Julianne or whatever it may be, kind of giving that personal welcome feel as they initially sit at the table. From there, the flow of services, you know, the greeting process of, you know, how the service flows. We use a gin tea product, which is an English-based tea company. All of our teas are loose teas. We currently offer 12 selections of teas. One is a blossomy fashion, so it actually is a bud, tea bud itself, and kind of blossoms within the glass teapot itself. Really kind of giving it...
Oh, it's one of the flowers?
Yes.
Yeah, so I love those.
It's excellent. It's truly...
But is that a presentation tea, or is that a drinking tea?
It's actually both.
Okay.
So it's our one budding tea itself. It's a green tea based. It's excellent. It blossoms right in front of you.
How long does it take to open?
3 minutes.
Okay.
Nick, I'm sorry we got to jump in because we're going to take a break. Everybody, we'll be right back to hear more about what's going on at the Mandarin Oriental's Empress Lounge. This is David Nicky Nellis with Foodie and the Beast.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
All right, everybody, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Before we get back to talking about our day at the Mandarin Oriental, we want to thank the folks that support the show, including the Mandarin Oriental, Georgetown Bagelry, the Virginia Wine Board, the American Land Board, and Neighborhood Restaurant Group. Now let's get back to Nikki and her talk with Blake Parker at the Empress Lounge.
So there was some chatter about an upcoming transformation of the already stunning Empress Lounge patio. Blake was going to tell me all about it.
So we started our renovation mid to late August. Complete renovation of the concrete to the landscape itself. Expanding the lounge and doubling its size. Mm-hmm. State-of-the-art design.
When you say expanding its size, mm-hmm. you mean expanding its size outside or expanding it inside?
Correct. So expanding the patio. So right now it's a half moon shape, extending it out another 8 feet mm-hmm. To allow additional tables, additional seating. Mm-hmm. Adding about 4 fire pits, which will be gas fire pits, permanently in the concrete themselves.
Now, will you put those out, provided the weather is fine? Like, will that be an all-year thing?
Correct. It'll be an all-year event. Okay. So anything from summer to winter itself.
You'll have little blankets in the winter?
Yeah. Little pashminas and blankets. Mm-hmm. Kind of keeping the outdoor experience year-round.
So do you love champagne? I do, and so does Nick. And National Champagne Day is coming up on August 3rd. And if you haven't marked your calendar yet for something to do, mark it down to visit the Mandarin Oriental.
And we're going to do a 3-course tea and champagne pairing from 2:30 to 4:30.
So what does that mean with a champagne pairing? They'll provide how many?
So we'll do it per course. So we'll do 3 glasses of champagne per course. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Wait, sign me up.
1 glass of champagne per course, so 3 total. We'll start off with a rosé champagne, then move into a Brut Reserve, and also do a little bit of a higher-end millennium champagne from Charles Heisek as well, as a 3rd course as well.
And can people sign up for that? How do people become a part
of
that?
So we did an email blast through our corporate website, mm-hmm. but also it's posted on OpenTable as well.
Okay.
So we took reservations through the hotel itself and the reservation system, through myself personally, through Empress Lounge, mm-hmm. But also through OpenTable.
So having spent the entire day at the Mandarin Oriental, we can assure you that there are many, many ways to enjoy the luxury, the pampering, and the high-touch personal service they offer there. As we left, Tim Harlith, the hotel's director of front office operations, reminded us about the hotel's ultimate fan of the city package. And I got to tell you, if you're going to go to the Mandarin Oriental at all, you might as well go big.
The ultimate fan of the city package is a $10,000 per night stay in our Jefferson Suite, which I'm going to take you up to show.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes a 6-course dinner prepared in suite by James Beard award-winning chef Eric Siebold and the Citizen
it'd
team.
It would be worth it just to make Eric do that, wouldn't it? You know, he walks in, hey man, nice. Wait, and, I know you guys.
And ask as many questions as you can as he's preparing the meal.
Eric, where did this spinach come from? How did you source it?
In addition to the fantastic meal in the guest room prepared by Chef Eric, you have a 150-minute massage in our fantastic spa, afternoon tea in Empress Lounge.
150 minutes is 2.5 hours. I could do that.
That's a long massage. I could not.
Is that the same person? Are they dead at the end?
1 hour and 50 minutes. 1 hour and 50 minutes.
Oh. That's all right. A big all right.
That might change.
That's still not bad either. That's 110 minutes. Yes. I'll take that.
Okay. An hour and 50-minute massage in our spa, afternoon tea. Fantastic with the afternoon
tea. So, Tim, were you a math major? Or?
Math is not my specialty.
It's not his either. Don't worry.
Lastly, the choice of Monuments by Moonlight Tour, Sunset Cruise along the Potomac, or Washington National.
One day at the Mandarin Oriental is not nearly enough time to soak in all that the hotel is and has to offer. So guess what? We're going back. As the hotel prepares to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the celebrated restaurant City Zen and its cornerstone James Beard award-winning chef, Eric Siebold.
All right, that's pretty much all the time we have. Everything you heard about on the show today and a whole lot more you can find on Nikki's website, thelistareyouata.com. It's free to subscribe, and free is good. Also follow her on Twitter and listen to her every Sunday on WTOP at 12:50 and on Thursdays at 12:10.
12:10.
I can never remember.
12:10.
That's
okay.
It. We're done.
Don't forget to join us next week. We have another terrific show. The people from Arcadia Farms are going to be in studio talking about what they're growing there. And Stellenbosch Wines are coming to the United States, and they're coming to the Foodie and the Beast studio. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed your virtual tour of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Please have a delicious week.